everybody. Welcome back to Pack Your Mics. We are, I'm going to go ahead and say this. We're the best Top Chef podcast right now.
Woo. Name half of one other one.
No, I can't. And that's why, because I'm confident that we exist. And that's how far I'm willing to take this claim. I don't want to inadvertently be hating on another Top Chef podcast, but I've not found another one.
Yeah, until if you tell us you exist also, you're better than us. But until you tell us that you exist.
Wait, then what happens?
Like, yeah, we'll give it to you. I'm happy giving anyone else that exists, they can say they're better than us. But until
really?
We find out they exist.
You're not going to defend me? Like, you're just going to let the honor of our podcast just slip away like that?
I don't think the other ones exist, honestly.
You think that the fact of a different podcast would negate our bestness?
Yeah.
That is exactly what he's saying.
It would call it into question, at least.
Wow. All right. Well, so we are, for now at least, the best Top Chef podcast. We're from the creators of Read It and Weep. Each week, we're going to break down the episodes of Top Chef. We are getting near the end, you guys. It's coming down to it. Let's introduce ourselves. But as we do, I would like each of you guys to say a location that you wish was the location of the Top Chef finale this year. We've had some interesting ones over the years. Singapore, notably. Mm. And then a cruise ship and Alaska, sort of less notably.
That wasn't the finale. That was just the end of the regular season.
The cruise ship was the in between, and then Alaska was the finale, wasn't it?
No, that was just like the end of the Seattle thing, and then they went to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Mm. Really?
Uh-huh.
I guess I've blocked that out because boring.
Yeah, they just had a lot of locations that time.
Yeah, they did. So it was the Seattle / Alaska / ocean season, and then the... Anyway.
Because Kristen won in Alaska, didn't she?
No, she won... I think she won...
She got back on the show in Alaska?
She got back on the show in Alaska, maybe?
I do remember like Last Chance Kitchen ended up in Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, so we just found out that this season is ending up in Maui.
Maui Wowie.
And so we're... You're forgiven if you decide to never say that ever again. So here's what I'll just tell you mine. So I'm Alex Falco and I'm in Portland. And obviously I think I would like to see a Top Chef finale in space.
Damn it, that was mine.
Was it?
Sure, the International Space Station cooking in 0G. How do you even use a Bunsen burner?
I don't know, but I love it.
You don't. Yeah. Clearly you don't.
Probably you don't because you're paying.
Man, that was mine. It's so good.
The oxygen is so expensive.
Yeah, the production alone is too expensive.
I love the idea of this, especially, I mean, it's an obvious choice, Chris, because of season 7, episode 12, when the chefs were asked to create a dish that could be served in zero gravity at NASA headquarters. Which you may recall is when Angelo won for his ginger lacquered short ribs and horseradish creme fraiche. And Tiffany was eliminated for her pan-seared Alaskan halibut with coconut curry, snow peas, and jasmine rice. Which, you know, sounds fine on Earth, but ugh.
You don't want to have
to trip.
You got
that all from memory, Alex? It's great.
Yep. Just knew all of that off the top of my head.
Wow.
I feel like the real lesson here is we don't want to track down individual grains of rice on a space station where they might get like futz with the wiring or something.
They might, right? And then you'd have to like build an adapter around the rice out of socks and a square peg in a round hole.
All right, gentlemen, we've got this. They have this up there. We need to put the soy sauce onto the rice.
And then you have to try to open the packet of soy sauce with four gloves on. It's really difficult. I would love it. I'll let you have that one also, Chris, because you assisted on it.
I'll think of something else.
Okay. Also joining me in Portland, it's Megan. Megan, where would you like to see a finale?
Well, I was thinking about it, and I thought a city like Paris or Rome would be really cool.
Paris would be so cool.
But I know that probably a lot of the finale cities offer incentives to Top Chef so that they're, you know, to have them there.
Yeah, I would assume so.
And I don't think that Paris or Rome are really looking to, like, market their...
To up their brand?
Yeah, their culinary culture.
Interestingly enough, space is also not offering money.
So I think I was trying to think of a city that I think wants to market itself towards American tourists. And so I came up with Reykjavik, Iceland.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Reykjavik would have something to say. The problem is all the dishes would have to be sheep and rocks.
And fish.
they have
like
fish.
Some salted fish. Yeah.
Limited supply of fresh vegetables, I guess, would be the downside.
Well, that's part of, I mean, that's just part of the challenge.
Yeah, you know? And they would all dress in layers.
Yeah, lots of sweaters.
That sounds super fun. I'd watch that. Chris,
you can go to work also.
What?
I think we also get Bjork as like a guest judge.
Oh, totally get Bjork. Oh, yeah. I think or I think Reykjavik is required to toss in a free Bjork with every purchase.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Brooklyn now. We have I'm gonna say I'll call it a light panel tonight. We have the short panel. So Tanya couldn't make it. Chris, representing Brooklyn by yourself, where would you like to see since space is taken? If space were
dang
off
it,
the table.
All of outer space. Dang it. And the moon. Oh, man.
Yeah, I guess
moon.
I just called close Earth orbit. I guess you could take the moon or Venus or something. Like, try to cook something at 6,000 degrees.
Well, 6,000 degrees is the surface of the sun, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
No, you know, actually, I was thinking that what might be fun in like an offbeat way, if not space, thanks a lot, Alex, is, you know, something like the Palm Desert of California, where you're really catering to old people and golfers. So it's just you go out there, it's real hot, and you have to make something soft.
And sort of bland.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of bland, but also, you know, something that tastes like the 50s.
A little bit overcooked.
Yeah, a little overcooked.
And they serve dinner at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, tell your story, but we're not going to wait past 4:30.
Right. Everyone's going to be in bed, so keep it a short story. That does sound fun. Also, even though you're mad at me for taking space, I feel
so mad.
I feel closer to you. Ezra, in San Francisco, is the extent of our San Francisco panel tonight. Ezra, where would you like to see a Top Chef finale?
So I was split, actually. First, I would love to have like the vice presidential bunker, an undisclosed location. Because I love the idea of like trying to like, you know, like oh, and all the wonders of, I can't tell you where we are.
Of undisclosed location.
Yeah.
I like that idea. I also like the idea that undisclosed location has a huge tourist budget.
Mm-hmm.
But they're trying to attract some attention, but they still can't say where they are.
That's the hardest part, right?
If you that would like, be the hardest job in the world is Tourism Bureau of Undisclosed Location.
Yeah, lat long null.
I would love to get us on the map, but I cannot. Yeah, right.
Literally, we are not put on the map yet.
You can't cook anything local.
Just local produce, canned foods.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, the other thing I think would be even cooler, going back in time to the first challenge. So like...
So your location is back in time?
Yeah,
Twin
exactly.
Pines Mall, 1984?
Yeah, not not where, Alex, when.
That would be a hell of a finale. But you'd be bumping into the first challenge.
Yeah, well, so I think you have to kind of plan for this, right? So it's like you just, on the first challenge, he's like, hey, but what's happening behind that door? Like, oh, we can't tell you.
No, we could tell you, but it might destroy the universe.
And then, like, I figure if, like, I don't know, if Nicholas by accident, like, wins, you know, in the finale, then, like, Nina can just, like, go ahead into, like, the past and, like, just, like, punch old Nicholas in the head so he will not win the challenge anymore.
No, you cannot. Okay, you absolutely cannot do that because here's what's going to happen. This is the paradox of time travel, Ezra. Now we understand why Nicholas has been a jerk this whole show is because Nina from the future punched him in the head for no reason. You would be angry too.
I mean, here's the problem with that is if you know who's going to win, you got one person, yourself from the past that you cannot meet or else it will break the entire universe. Uh-huh. You've got 15 other people on the other side of that door that really want you to lose.
It doesn't seem like a good situation, Ezra.
No.
I think you might as well stick to space because it was realistic.
Can you argue on this, though? It does sound like good TV.
I will not disagree that it's good TV. It's just now I have to feel bad for Nicholas for getting punched in the head for no reason.
How great would it have been, though, if they set it up this way and, like the first episode of Top Chef, like a sort of older, like more like worn, angrier-looking version of Nina just comes and punches Nick in the head for no reason. And we have to watch the season wondering why it's going
to
happen.
We have to go back. Ezra, we have to go back and watch the first episode to see if he's holding his skull.
Small Band-Aid on forehead for no op, and they never talk about it. The medic came in is like, I'm not even touching that. I don't know what I'll get. I'll get future syphilis or something.
Oh, God.
All right. That sounds all. If
that
any of those things happen.
Alex, can we just say that'll be the last mention of future syphilis on this show?
Or any show.
I wish I could guarantee that.
I think we might have cornered the market on that. If any of those things happen, you'll find out about it. I think we should be taping our our finale podcast from somewhere special. We'll try to decide on
undisclosed cool. location.
Yeah, it's nice this time of year. We'll all meet in the bunker next week to discuss. It's great. These microphones we bought at our local shop. Location redacted. Anyway, let's jump into this to episode 15 of Top Chef 11. 11? I was right, right? Why did I get confused?
Yeah, also? Season 11. Yeah,
sounds
season
good.
One.
Right?
Yeah, let's jump into episode 15. So, Chris, we'll start with you. Please describe for us the quickfire challenge today.
All right, so it's getting down to the wire. We've got four chefs left. Carlos, Nick, Nina, and Shirley. And the quickfire, actually, Padma comes in with Gail and Tom. And Gail's the one who presents the quickfire. And it's, you know, she just says...
Because what the show needed was more Gail.
Hey.
Hey.
I love Gail.
Oh, wait. Brooklyn likes Gail? Oh.
Brooklyn loves Gail.
I think San Francisco likes Gail, too.
What?
It's just Portland.
Has Portland
I think it's
Brooklyn...
just male Portland that doesn't like Gail.
No.
Megan?
No comment.
Why are you not defending me? I know how you feel Gail. About Gail. I know all of the things you've said about Gail. I will... Don't make me repeat them.
Okay. Anyway. Gail, her pitch is that she tastes a lot of food. She reviews a lot of food. And all she needs is one perfect bite to know, you know, if it's good. Or basically, I'm on a diet.
Yeah, I'm a reviewer with a time crunch.
Yeah, that's right. So she gives them, how much time was it? Was it 30 minutes? I don't even think it was that.
25?
It was very quick. To create basically an entire, you know, meal or the equivalent of in a flavor profile. So it has sweet, acidic, it has some heat, has some savory.
The schnozberries taste like schnozberries.
Exactly. All balanced on a single cocktail fork. So Carlos makes a shrimp dish with mango.
Is it weird that they kept calling them dishes when it's a fork? He made a shrimp fork.
Okay, he composed a serving, sure. A single serving.
Yeah, it just seemed grandiose to call them dishes when it was a bite.
Can we shrimp and mango go well together? You know, they've gone well together for a while. Nicholas did meat and potatoes. Shirley did. We had two beefs and two shrimps because Shirley also did. Shirley and Nick both did beef, and Nina and Carlos both did shrimp. Mm-hmm. And I think. The judging, it all came down, it seemed like, to composition, because everything, it seemed like, tasted good, but, like, Shirley's was a little bit sloppy on the fork, and it just meant, like, it was hard to balance or something like that. And
yeah,
you know, the
same
way.
Well, because she plated with tweezers.
Well, everybody did, yeah. I mean, like, Nicholas was fussing with his tweezers all episode. Like, all they were using was tweezers, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was just, like, an abundance of tweezers. Like, it's just a big... order of tweezers that came in along with the like immunities and no knife walk.
Yeah. So,
and the cream cheese.
Yeah.
That's right. And the Philadelphia brand cream cheese.
I just want to take a quick look over your packing slip here. Just to make sure we've got everything. Tweezers. Yeah.
Check.
Yeah. Do you knife blocks?
No.
I'm sorry. I misread that. No knife blocks. Do you have that?
Yes. Affirmed.
Good. This is a weird delivery. Yeah, so the cocktail fork. What do you guys think of this as a challenge? This is a new one, right? We haven't seen the single bite. We've seen a mousse bouche, but never single bite in a fork, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's what
I mean, it's not
that
different. I mean, I feel like the mousse bouche is usually in like a spoon. So I guess
sometimes it's a finger food, which I like.
Yeah.
So this is like a single finger's worth.
But they've done spoon things before, right?
They have, especially
an amused
finger catering challenge where it's been a cocktail party, and they've had to make the little thing. So this was like an even more challenging version of that. And actually, all the chefs had all those elements on the fork. I was really impressed. I don't know about you guys, but
yeah, it seemed really cool. I mean, the tweezers thing is just it's slightly ridiculous, right?
Well, they were food grade tweezers.
Right, okay. I was not worried about the cleanliness of the tweezers.
They were the pro model.
Yeah.
The pro model is just the normal model, and they charge more for it. There's no difference.
Yeah, but they powder coat it with black. You know.
I don't know. It just seemed like... okay, I don't know. The whole, like, I can tell perfect food in one bite seemed a little weird from everybody's
Simmons.
Favorite Gale. But then also, like, just the tweezers thing got, like, I don't know. I was like... You know how thermodynamics are not the same at the micro scale? This is my problem, is food doesn't work in the one bite version. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
You need a second bite?
I need thirds.
I'm not talking bites. Like, I think we can maybe say, like, hey, I can tell, everything I need to know about the meal in one bucket.
Just give me a bucket of it. I guess we're playing taste that
just
meal.
Just pour everything into that there bucket.
I could taste this meal in 6 bites. I could taste this meal in 4 bites.
Taste that meal. Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so guys, I mean, that was only the first part of the quickfire.
Oh, right. I forgot this was the double.
Yeah, so Carlos and Nick, for all their tweezering or lack of tweezering or whatever, they had the best composition.
They move on.
And the second part Tom presents is he wants them to highlight a single vegetable ingredient, a bell pepper or an eggplant. And Carlos is really excited because he knows how to make an eggplant marmalade, and he's going for the eggplant. And then Nick, 4 years varsity high school track, swoops in, grabs the eggplant, and Carlos is left with the red bell pepper. And Nicholas, in classic Nicholas fashion, is perhaps a little arrogant about it, but does eggplant.
Because he got punched in the head 14 weeks ago for no reason by Nina.
Yeah, he did eggplant that was shaped like a scallop, and he did some eggplant puree, and Carlos did a roasted red pepper soup.
Hold on for just one second.
Yeah.
What if she didn't punch him in the head, but she gave him mysterious illness in episode 4?
She wafted a vial of disease under him?
Or she gave him future syphilis.
But wait, it's in the past, though.
I'm sorry. I promised it would be the last one, but then it came up again. I just go with it, you know?
Alex, though, think about this. If you give someone future syphilis in the past, you just gave him syphilis. The future and the past cancel out.
Balance your equation.
Yeah, you have to reduce your fractions. I think you're right. I think in this case, she just gave him syphilis. I'm not sure how. I don't want to know. But he deserved it. Anyway, I'm sorry. Continue.
So it's a bunch of eggplant versus roasted red pepper soup. And the prize is a car. Just like how Shirley won a car. Also, Toyota gave them a second car that they want to give away. Toyota Corolla.
Do you think that's the one that everyone was driving around during Last Chance Kitchen?
You think they gave them a used Corolla?
No. I mean, lightly used? They didn't use it a lot.
Only used by old Top Chef contestants on Sundays.
It was really... or it's the Last Chance Kitchen Eliminated House's party wagon.
Right.
When they're not cooking, they're just joyriding
around.
It
smells a little bit like... This was like just a leftover Lewis t-shirt in the back seat. No one knows why.
Yeah. It comes with the dealer installed Michael.
Yeah, Michael's in the back going, you know, if you drive a little faster, you can get there in shorter time. Just thought you should know that. That's an old trick.
Oh, that stop sign. That's one of my favorite stop signs to stop at.
Anyway, Carlos wins. Shocker wins.
He
for
does.
The red pepper soup.
Earning him immunity. Oh, wait, no. Immunity's gone.
Just fresh out. We do have a lot of cars, though.
This is the last immunity, but he does win a car. Or there's no more immunity. But what's weird, Donnie and I were talking about this. He makes basically a better version, maybe, of the same thing you can buy in a box at Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Well, but
you know
why? You're gonna say the same thing.
I'm gonna say the same thing. That's that the roasted red pepper soup from Trader Joe's is not good.
It's not that good.
So if he made a better version of that, then that's fine.
It was at least better than not good.
Waiting to be improved. He's desperate for that. So, I mean, it seemed like Nicholas was really mad at him, like was down on him for making soup. But the Top Chef has an illustrious history of crowning soup victors.
Well, it's hard to develop good flavor with soup. And I guess if you do soup really well, it's like a risk-reward thing. If you do it well, it's better than anything.
Yeah.
But if you do it poorly, it's not going to impress anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Wasn't that like Spike's only victory was the one time he insisted on making soup?
I mean, great soup. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guys, I think as long as you don't ice your dashi, you're probably not going home for soup, even if it's mediocre.
I mean, I have nothing wrong with him making soup. I don't hold that against him.
I'd prefer
soup to Nicholas's eggplant 15 ways.
Yeah.
8 of those being bad. Yeah. One of them looking like a dollar.
None of them have, Right. Also, there's also an illustrious history with things that are not scallops pretending to be scallops on this show.
Oh,
with, of course, Blaze's banana scallops. And so I thought eggplant scallops were less impressive.
Actually, I'd love to see, like, sort of the, if someone wants to do, like, some numbers, I'd love to see, like, the types of dishes attempted and, like, win percentage and, like, going home percentage. Because I think soup is better than average.
That's interesting.
It's probably better than average. It's also attempted less than average. So something like a scallop, I think, would have the most attempts. So even though it might have won a few times, its percentage might not be that good. But,
yeah. Whereas like salad is like the win percentage is zero. And dessert is like,
unless it's a salad challenge.
Yeah. Even then, though, it's like a tie goes through.
It's a tie wash to the person who attempted not to make salad.
It's a like, soup salad.
It's not salad. So. Good job.
Whoever ordered salad, soup and salad at the same time is going to have a better time.
You're going to salad zero ways. I like it.
So that's the quick fire, you guys.
Carlos won a car. He finally won a big prize.
Was anybody else disappointed that Shirley didn't win a fleet of Toyotas?
I was so disappointed.
Yeah. I wanted her to ride them like in the Zorro movie, how Zorro rides two horses at the same time. He's straddling them.
He
like
lashes them together.
She does the splits while they're both going down the freeway Jean-Claude. Like
JCVD.
Yeah. I think that would be pretty excellent. I like Shirley so much. She's just the best.
Yeah.
And really, I guess I could win another car. So fun.
I could sell a car. Yeah.
Well, actually, the good news is if you win two cars, you can sell one to pay the taxes on the other one. That would be pretty great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the car was for like her parents or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So she could just keep one now.
The air conditioner was for her husband. The car was for her parents, or was it the other way around? I think it was that way.
Yeah, it was that way.
Yeah.
She's giving away all this. She's like Johnny Apple Car at this point.
He's giving it to his daughter. I mean.
Oh, was he?
He already has a car, so he wanted to give it to his daughter. It's the right size car for her to be driving, and apparently she's just driving age.
That's sweet.
That is sweet.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Whereas Nicholas decided to point out that he's the only one who hasn't won anything big yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Which could possibly be related to the fact that you're usually on the bottom because you're not doing very well.
He's been on the bottom the last five times.
He's got a lot of bottoms.
I mean, he might have the future past syphilis to blame on that one.
Yeah, yeah. Still a little sick. But that, which does mean, I guess we're agreeing that he wins then. Is that our... Well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let's jump into the elimination challenge right now. I guess we should just in passing mention Nicholas... Still kind of a jerk. But on the plus side, Carlos wasn't here to make friends, it turned out. That was good to know.
Yeah.
If he had been, he's losing all over the place.
Yeah. I like the people who said, I didn't come here to make friends, but then I did. They're great.
Yeah, that's the best.
Those are my favorite people.
I like because Carlos said it kind of the other direction, but he's like, he said it like backwards or something. He was like, but, you know... not making friends is—it's not what I came here for. Like he tried to—he played jazz with it a little bit.
It's like it's the Yoda version of it.
But yeah, variations on a theme.
Not making friends is.
All right, let's talk about the elimination challenge. Ez, it's up to you.
Sure.
Describe for us, San Francisco, if you would please describe for us the elimination challenge.
Okay, so as you guys might have heard mentioned once or twice, these people are in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Or Nolens, or NOLA.
Uh-huh.
And basically, this is sort of the, I guess, kind of closing time, you know, Green Day, you know, Good Riddance, like, summation.
Is that the one where they make a parking lot on Paradise, or is that a different one?
I think that's a different one. Oh, okay. This is like my eighth grade, like, graduation song.
Right.
Like,
you know, like, also, the dance is over, go home. That's
yeah, exactly.
Mm.
So anyway, basically, in summation... What happened in New Orleans? You know, did you have a good time? What make your mark on the city? You know, like just everything you've learned, everything you've tasted.
So, you know, for example, Tom would have cooked a dish that represented his first tattoo, and everyone else would, and it would have had a lot of booze in it. That's what they would have had to have done.
Did Tom get a tattoo?
Did Tom get a tattoo?
Yeah, you noticed, Chris. You told us about this. He tweeted the picture of it.
Oh, that's right.
He got his first tattoo.
It was his. Oh,
it was his first. It was just. It's just his kids' names because he missed his kids a lot.
Aww.
Super sweet. Yeah, anyway. There was a great shout out to Bravo's website, which, despite still being impossible to navigate, did have a great behind-the-scenes video with cast members talking about how much fun they had in New Orleans, and Padma talking about going to like a random bar at 3 in the morning and seeing a couple of the assistant producers and a random camera guy dancing all night, and just everyone talking about what a great time they had. And how they had way more drinks than they have at any other city. And Tom talked about his tattoo more, and it was really fun. I enjoyed that video a lot.
Okay, yeah. So I guess Tom would have a tattooed, I don't know, like 6-minute fish, I guess.
Yeah. Or he'd have it like with squid ink and some other stuff.
Oh, yes, that's pretty good. Squid ink and bourbon. That would be his.
That's pretty smart.
That's that is smart, Chris. Holy crap. All right. Anyway, continue.
Yeah. So basically, you know, make your mark on the city with your dish, and the winner gets to have Emeril use that dish to make the mark on the city and feature
record his voice on your personal answering machine. Really nice of Emeril.
But yeah, so there's all these people like let's see, for judging, some of which I knew, I guess. Grant Ishats sounds familiar. Andrew Carmelini and Douglas quote Green Dog Rescue Keen. Oh, that was his charity.
Yeah, so that
he makes me so mad.
So we've kind of avoided talking about this because I think as you hadn't finished the season.
We caught up, yeah.
You did. Okay, good. Because if you hadn't, they'd spoiled it anyway because they brought on winner of Top Chef Masters, Douglas Keen, well known for his charity being I'm a big guy, I like to wrestle with dogs, and his dog wrestling charity winning $100,000 from
his performance. It could have been Doctors Without Borders.
Yes, Doctors Without Borders.
It could have been the American Red Cross. But Doug relates more to dogs than he does to people, and he wanted to give $100,000
to his charity.
To a charity that helps socialize stray dogs with packs of other stray dogs. Because a socialized stray dog is less of a menace.
And every picture of it was just everything. Every time they talked about the charity, they showed a picture of him just covered in puppies.
You know, like we never really talked about like Mike Volt's, or sorry, Brian Volt's charity whatsoever on the show. It must have been better than this.
Right. Yeah, did he not win anything? Bravo
game. He won money at the very, very end. Right. I think it was like $5,000.
Oh, right. His sous chef won money for
him. Yeah. But they actually never said on the air what Brian's.
Maybe Brian's charity was just a group that set up right outside of Douglas's charity, and it like took dogs and took off their collars and let them run free.
Yeah. Or maybe he made a documentary movie called like Black Dog that exposed all the animal abuses at Douglas Keene's charity.
That sometimes Doug doesn't let the dogs win.
Yeah.
Oh,
when he wrestles them. Anyway, I'm so glad we finally got to talk about Green Dog Rescue.
God, dogs helping other dogs.
You know, I just wish this dog could meet other dogs. He's a lonely dog. I love
dogs. Dogs.
It I just
heard you like
money
dogs,
away from
so
Doctors
put a dog
Without
in your
Borders
dog.
For that. That seems good.
Dogs Without Borders also got some money, which was nice.
God.
Dogs Without Border Collies.
Anyway, I'm sure he's a hell of a guy and a great chef. I cannot stand his charity.
I'm sure he's awesome.
Please,
I'm
someone
sure
else talk.
Even
I'm
the charity,
so angry.
I think the charity's probably fine. It's just compared to the other charities, it was like, dude didn't pick the best PR-related charity. It was just not. One was like builds clinics for his dad, helping his dad build clinics in other countries.
For orphans.
For orphans.
For orphans. Yeah.
Clinics for orphans. No, wrestling dogs charity one. Anyway, an illustrious
maybe just like
panel.
What about a charity that just like wants to stop inflation, so they just burn money? Just like taking money out of circulation. That's it.
Better than a civilization service for dogs.
It is weird about the dog thing, but also, what makes you think of that?
Well, I was just trying to think of a worse charity.
Oh. Setting on money on fire charity?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
So wrap this
up. Challenge.
So it's a tough panel. And actually, Gail mentioned on the blog that she was really nervous going into that. Like, she was nervous as a judge because these three chefs are so well-respected. That she was like, if my chefs on my show do not cook well, I'm going to be embarrassed.
Oh, this is like the sit up straight, honey. Like, you know, use your
yeah, exactly. Voice. She said she felt like a theater mom. Like, you're doing
so
great,
she
honey.
Didn't want this to be a Roy Choi situation.
Exactly.
Now you guys kind of shat the bed when Roy Choi came around. So let's see if we can fix it this time.
And then Roy Choi spent 10 minutes talking about how they shat the bed.
And then the winner is, I guess, Shirley.
Give her Shirley. Have another car. Parents. We're done with her. All right. So make something about the mark Nola left on you and how you leave your mark on Nola.
Mm-hmm. Basically, in summation, seafood. People like seafood.
This is a classic cook your own seafood.
Yeah. There's fish in the Gulf and shrimp in the Gulf.
Yeah, it's true. Several different. And if you're Nicholas, it's fish six ways.
Yeah, no kidding.
So to kill the suspense, on the top, we got Shirley for with a black drum and vinegar butter, and they liked it. And then there was also Nina, barbecue shrimp inspired dish, without, oh yeah, it was like a little malfatti, like a little Italian dough type thing that she...
With cheese dough.
Cheese dough, yeah.
Italian cheesy breadsticks, which, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But oh, no, because she forgot it.
Right.
She forgot it at the last minute. She like made them and they were sitting off to the side.
Or maybe, just possible alternate theory of the fact, maybe she just ate all of them because that sounds so delicious. I think she just cookie doughed all those things, just shoveling them in her mouth while she was cooking.
What happened to them?
I forgot. Oops,
it's very stressful, all that cooking.
And the problem of Megan, you've been baking for 2 hours. Why do you only have two cookies?
When I started, she's just stress eating the Italian dough.
I mean, here's
that's
the issue.
That's what happened to me for real.
Totally.
So Nina like made the correct play where she did not like tell people what she left off the dish, because I hate it when the contestants do that. It was like, hey, I was going to give you this, but then I didn't.
Right.
So
yeah,
sorry
right.
about that. But so she didn't do that, which was good. But then like,
but it was the sort of dish where they expected. The
yeah. Well, she made the mistake of she talked to Tom, I guess, about it beforehand.
Tom and Emerald both, when they were doing their kitchen snooping, had talked to her about the dough, so they knew and they outed her.
Basically, never tell them anything. You just be like, I might make you for some food or not. We'll see. And they're like, hey, as advertised, you got all the food on the plate. Good job.
Hey, or not. Tom comes around, he goes, what you making? And you go, what's it look like I'm making?
Making chef's surprise.
Mind your own goddamn business, Tom. That's what I'm making. So Shirley wins. Shirley, in addition to her half fleet of cars and her money, she gets also her dish all over Emerald's restaurants.
Yeah, served at all of Emerald's restaurants in New Orleans.
Right.
For an unspecified period of time.
Right.
Until people don't like it.
Yeah, isn't this also sort of like... Like, the prize is Emerald steals your idea.
Yes, exactly.
They do a lot of these prizes. We're like, congratulations. We're going to take that idea and use it to make money.
I this is one of the better ones, because a lot of the time, like, it's like your dish will be featured on all Applebee's to-go menus or something.
Oh, God.
This one. Or at Milestones.
It's Canadian for Applebee's.
Yeah, this will be given away on people's birthdays at Milestones. So this one was a good one though. Like being on Emerald's menu is probably pretty prestigious and awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Not probably is. I mean, like assuming he puts a nice like border around it and says from Shirley, like it's a great idea. And then on the bottom, it's the boys.
Got some bottoms also. Yeah. So this is like flipped from the elimination, I guess. Maybe that. Sorry, flip from the quick fire. So maybe just like the dudes like got tired after cooking two dishes and
battle of the sexes. Yeah,
yeah. So Carlos made a tamal or multiple tamales with seafood instead of the corn. And first dudes,
I'm gonna out myself as dumb. Thank you for explaining that why they were sometimes called a tamal.
Yeah,
one tamal, two tamales.
Nicely done.
And it sounds wrong to say a tamal, because we call them a tamale or two tamales.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things.
Huh.
So always talk about in plural, then, if you don't want to have to make the choice.
I mean, that's a classic traveling abroad decision.
Yeah.
Because then you also don't have to worry about gender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just everything, just you now are eating two tamales. Yeah. That's what you want.
Yeah. Also, the benefit, like the huge bonus here is... You never only get one tamale, or one tamale, which is one a sad tamale. Story.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although sometimes it's made with seafood mousse, which...
Which they liked. Let's just say reinvented the tamales genre.
Yeah, no one ever thought of that before.
Yeah. Do you guys do this thing where whenever you see, like, you know, like when you're ordering Chinese food or whatever, like Thai, like you can have chicken, beef... shrimp or seafood, and they never specify what the seafood is. It's just like mixed seafood.
Mind your own business. That's what the seafood is.
Yeah. So when he's like, "Oh, it's made with seafood, the mousse," I just went, "Ah."
No. Well, that's probably fairly honest, actually, because a lot of fish that you buy is not what it actually is advertised.
Right, because
being.
Of food fraud.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
It's like something like they did a study and like half of the fish being sold in LA was not what it was.
Oh, I know.
It's not what it was.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so crazy.
By just saying seafood, you sort of avoid that whole thing. Yeah. You know?
Right. Also,
good point.
I've never looked at a dish and been like, I wish you could take out all of the corn and replace it with fish paste.
Yeah. They do that. A lot of people on this season in particular have made like mousse or otherwise pureed fish, and it just seems so disgusting.
Yeah, that well, seems hold on right a second. Have you looked at some corn chips guys and be like, I wish those were fish chips?
Meat chips?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like
I like mousse? Fish, like fish with chips is much better than fish as chips.
Yeah. That's true.
Fish is chips. That's not a dish.
It's obviously just me because like the judges like it usually, but it just seems really gross to me.
Unlike when I had a thing about Gail and you didn't support me, I agree with you. It's not just you. Fish mousse sounds weird.
It does sound weird, but it seems like every season there's a different weird thing that catches on that actually is well executed, and you know, it seems like a weird idea. So like one season it was foam and the judges actually liked the foam. Or one season it was, what was it, that thing, like a roulade or whatever, where they take all those bits and they squish them together. Mm. Oh, a tartine.
Oh, the tartine. Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Like, but when done super well, apparently it's really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what was going on with this mousse, because Carlos' dish actually got, you know, pretty good reviews. It was just that it was a little cold. It wasn't served in a leaf. Instead, it was just kind of on top of some sauce on a plate.
So definitely the winner here is Gail for having not been embarrassed in front of her friends. Because every chef cooked great food.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And yeah, the new seafood tamal was just slightly worse, I guess, than Nick's you know, seafood everything ways.
Yeah. Oh, seafood all the ways.
Yeah, seafood all the ways.
It was like three different fish, and then anyway, yeah. But and everything was great except that he didn't salt the fish at all. There's no salt in the fish, and they were under seasoned like everything else he does. So let's just use that to springboard then into the quip fire, because this is one of those classic Top Chef problems, which is the bigger sin. So what do you send home, perfectly cooked or perfectly seasoned? If you can only get one of those two.
I would have gone for perfectly seasoned, I think.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys
think? A tastier bite versus a...
I mean, he overcooked his fish. No,
I think you're thinking of Last Chance Kitchen.
I am.
Yeah.
You are. No, the sin with Nicholas's dish was
so sorry.
He under-seasoned his fish. He finally cooked
salt.
Finally made a good
sauce.
Was
that salt?
Yeah, it was just salt.
Yeah, it's just a little finishing salt.
Yeah, he needed a little finishing salt, and he didn't have it. And Carlos's was that it was a tamale to represent New Orleans.
Really? I don't think that's why.
I thought the problem was that the cold. One of them was cold, and the mousse was really good, but then there was like...
The seafood and the mousse wasn't good.
Yeah, the seafood and the mousse was just a little odd.
Harmonious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so sorry for the thing about the quipfire then. I guess the bigger question is what happened here with this elimination? What happened with Carlos going home when the thing that they had a problem with was so much less obvious? I mean, 64% of America thought that Nicholas was going home in the Insta poll on the screen.
Yeah.
Although they were wrong during the quickfire, so maybe America just dumb.
Yeah, I mean, America doesn't like Nick.
Yeah.
America has a villain.
Yeah. No kidding. Remember how we used to feel bad when Nicholas got sick? No, I don't either. Moved on.
Future syphilis.
Yeah, I'm only angry at him. He was okay. He was still kind of a D-bag today, right? We can agree on that.
Yeah.
He was yelling at somebody he was yelling at Shirley for the temperature of the fryer, which is like, all right, Nicholas, the first five times you think someone sabotaged your cooking temperatures, maybe. But the sixth time, maybe it's you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also, after he won, he didn't even hold the door for Carlos. They were both walking out, and he let the door close in Carlos's face.
Boo. He's not a very gracious winner.
No.
Or gracious not loser.
Yeah. Or gracious loser. Even when like when he's not doing well, he's mad at other people.
Not all grace, I guess. I don't know.
I would say graceless.
I'm sure he's not a bad guy, because I don't believe in that many bad guys.
Okay, well, if you're defining your terms that way...
Yeah.
You're like,
I think you'd have to.
There are no bad guys, so I doubt that he is one.
Right? It's unlikely, isn't
it? Yeah, so he's getting under a very... Or he's stepping over a very low bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I think we can all agree on this.
Sort of like us being the best Top Chef podcast. You're like, you're basically just believing that Nicholas exists.
Yes, I believe he exists and is a guy.
Well, so here's what I think is interesting was Padma was clearly the one who thought Nicholas should go home and got outvoted.
Yeah, yeah.
And as a result, she was super bummed when Carlos left.
Yeah, she said it in a really, really sad way.
And then afterwards, she was like, yeah, that was hard. And she also like jumped on when they were talking about the moose. She was like, okay. But how long are we going to let Nicholas get away with this food not tasting good enough crap?
I wonder if like maybe Tom has just tasted so many good dishes. He's like, I don't know, has like maybe an extra like umami pouch in his mouth that he can just secrete like accidentally and just makes everything taste kind of good.
Can we clear this up? Are you or are you not a doctor? I'm just curious.
I'm not a doctor, okay. But
I think he's got an umami pouch in his mouth from eating too much good food.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's blown his palate out. Or maybe just like, I don't know, there's like a salty, like a salt pocket, like a salt mines of Tom Colicchio's like, I don't know, frontal lobe and just drips down.
Yeah, I also think it was probably like very, very minorly undersalted. And Padma was just, she was doing, I mean, this is another thing that's really interesting about this show is that Tom insists that it's only today's food that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it clearly is not the case. But like so, in at least in Padma's mind for this one, it wasn't like this fish was undersalted, and that's my biggest problem. She was like, "How long are we going to let him get away with this?" It was clear that Padma was mad at him.
Yeah,
for his, like she was taking his record into consideration.
Yeah, it was really clear from like the one thing she said.
Yeah. Well, no, okay. So it was clear from that sentence, but also in Gail's blog, she said Padma was the one who definitely thought Nicholas should go home.
Okay.
She said more about that in Gail's blog. Yeah.
Could we have a show that's like top nice person, or just like whoever is nicest gets to win?
It's weird because you're like, I mean, you're such a kind person. And I understand this is all coming from the right place, but also you do like good TV, right?
Well, I do like the idea of like, I mean, it's in the casting though, Alex. Like,
so all right. I'll
13 D-bags, one nice person.
Oh, so it's like The Bachelor for niceness or something?
Well, they're all... No, but Big Brother, but it's just like kind of rigged, I guess, where it's like there's clearly only one nice person there.
Wait, so the show is called Top Nice Person, but they sandbag.
Oh, but everyone else is wearing the nice person down, and they might turn into a mean person.
Ooh, well, I was thinking just like... So you get like, I guess like, you get like one hung, like who can actually cook, and then you get like 13 Hoseas, and you just see like... You know, you try to see the different levels of like... douchebaggery. It's like, well, this person is slightly less douche than the other one. I guess I'll send home that person last.
Can I add, this is my last time I'll mention things from Bravo's website, but I spent a little while on it tonight. But they also had an interesting video. It was called like Behind the Kitchen Door, where they were interviewing the director about the way he shoots the show and some of his decisions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he was talking about is he's got a documentary history, past. That's what he's done a lot of. And so he looks at this, like telling the stories, which is great. But then he said, like, so his example was his story of Nicholas, and the story of Nicholas that he was trying to tell was of how Nicholas was too kind early on, like when he tasted Stephanie's food because she had an allergy.
Right.
And sent her home.
Right. And then also how he they showed a clip of him loaning the knife to Carlos and getting bitten for that, apparently. And then also showed a clip of him saying, like, I'm getting used... I can turn into a monster if I need to. Like him sort of basically, like apparently some major foreshadowing that I did not remember. But the director was trying to tell the story of how Nicholas was put upon and turned bad. And all I'm getting is the bad part.
Yeah.
So that was really surprising that was his take.
Nicholas was .. bad.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Yeah. It was like, who is this guy? Why? I don't remember him being on the show at all. Oh, he's the jerk. That's all I remember of him. He showed up in, like, episode 6 with the ficus, and we had not seen either of them before. That's what it felt like.
Fair.
Anyway, yeah, so there's that. Let's jump into the Last Chance Kitchen then, because I thought I was already, and then because I was reading ahead in the script, but Megan, it's your turn to tell us what happened in Last Chance Kitchen. So we know that Carlos went home for his tamal.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going up against Lewis. Tell us what happened.
Well, so Last Chance Kitchen is very exciting because it's located in Maui, the finale location. And wait,
Chris, was that you not being impressed?
No, I love Maui.
Oh, okay.
Maui's one of my favorite places in the entire world. Oh. I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And so they're in Maui, and they are challenged to cook with some beautiful looking fish that were swimming yesterday.
Yeah.
One day from retirement. You guys, the vegetarian contingent in Portland, just like, they were just having the happiest day yesterday.
No, and that's not at all.
Their vacation to Maui, they finally got to go.
It was the way Tom said it. That instead of being like, these are very freshly caught, he was like, yesterday they were having a great time.
And they looked so like alive.
Yeah, they
still.
Were very
they
fish-like.
Looked like they could just jump off and swim back into the ocean and live a happy life. Anyway.
Were it not for Carlos sticking a knife up their gullet. Anyway. Occasionally we have vegetarian moments. This one I think was more just the ridiculousness of like talking about a dead thing swimming yesterday. I don't know. That just seemed weird.
But they're told that they need to prepare 5 plates, not just one for Tom, because he's going to have some guests help him with the judging.
Secret guests.
Of course. You know, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could be like 5 famous Hawaiians. Like the president. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
And so we find out that the secret guests are Emeril. And then also the 3 finalists.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And surprise. So they don't know who cooked what, and they vote by secret ballot.
Well, they say they don't, but right. One
supposedly
of them,
they don't.
Yeah. One of the dishes is going to be Mexican and the other one isn't, so pretty sure you know which one's Carlos.
What if we should get into the inherent racism of this.
We're going to. We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
That's on our document. Don't worry. That's on the docket.
Oh, good.
On the docket. That's what I meant. Yeah. So Carlos v. Lewis and Megan, who won?
I don't know. I forgot.
None of us know.
Part. Oh, good.
I kind of forget.
None of us know. What is?
I said. I think we know pretty conclusively. Actually,
we do. Could you tell from like the
from the freeze frame shot?
Really? Yeah. You could tell from the low. Oh, okay. Well, tell me that. I'm so excited. But first, before we get into Encyclopedia Brown, I just wanted to point out what I was getting at was they didn't tell us who won because that is to be revealed on next week's full episode because this was the finale of Last Chance Kitchen and they always do that. That's what I was getting at.
Boom, boom.
All right.
Boom, boom.
Lay it on me. Mr.
Okay,
Brown.
So there's a couple things. But yeah, apparently I was not the only person who did the freeze framing thing. Twitter seems to agree generally, as well as the comment sections of the world.
That's so interesting, because when I saw it, I was like, that seemed like they went a little further than I would have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That was like not full kimono, but it was like half kimono.
Well, if he's wearing a kimono, that seems to like narrow it down, because it's not Carlos, because he only wears Mexican clothing.
But
yeah, it'd be a serape.
Which is plural. It's serape when it's only one of them. Anyway. Anyways, so tell me what you learned. What did you figure out?
Okay, so people seem to think it was Lewis that won.
I wonder if the internet is just guessing with their hearts.
Couple things. So one, you can see the left hand and no wedding ring. So I don't know if Carlos had one, but this person does not.
With his ring
he does
on.
Have a wedding ring. I remember seeing it in this last episode. Yeah, because he was cooking with it on.
He was?
He was, yeah. I remember seeing that.
It could have been a very small guard against cutting his left ring finger.
Oh, yeah.
It's very protective.
Okay, fair. So the other thoughts, there's in the way the sleeves were rolled up also, it matched the way Lewis had his sleeves rolled up, but not the way that Carlos had his sleeves.
Can I take a second to tell the internet that I love them? Internet, you have some problems sometimes. You're pretty mean to women writers, among other things. Occasionally very racist.
Yeah, but women anything, I would say. Not doing a great job.
But man, you have your moments. I love you. I love you. All right, continue.
And yeah, also, I mean, one, the way that the person was sitting, standing like hands on hips, also pretty closely matched the way Lewis was standing before. And Carlos did not stand that way. So
wait, so which of these were your observations? Which one do you read later?
So I got sleeves.
Yeah. You got a Lewis-y feel from him.
Yeah, so I got stamps, sleeves. Actually, is how I got it.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was like, that feels like it's Lewis.
Mm. I want it to be Lewis so badly. I like Carlos fine. I actually think Carlos has gotten a lot of bad rap on this show. I thought he seems like a great chef, and I really like him. But I like the story with Lewis, and I've really come to enjoy Lewis from his time there, and I want him to win so bad.
Yeah,
I don't want him to win the whole show, but I want him to win Last Chance Kitchen.
I don't know if he did it, but I mean, I would be super duper surprised if it's Carlos.
Well, you heard it here first, unless you read it before that. So
yeah,
or figured it out yourself.
Yeah. You guys, I have a theory. What if they Twin Peaked it? What if they filmed that scene of the unveiling with both people?
Oh.
Playing one for the promos.
They should. If they did that, they need to change their name to Devious Elves.
Yeah,
because that would be amazing. Devious. God, yeah. I'm just so happy right now for both. I don't care how this goes. I think the world wins. Oh, I'm so excited. So we will find out next week conclusively whether it was Carlos's mole mahi-mahi or Lewis's overbraised yellowfish tuna.
Right, and this was what we were talking about.
Yes, this is the one I brought up. So let's talk about who we think ought to win then, just from the way it was edited. So there were the two problems. Lewis slightly overcooked his fish, but it was still moist. And Carlos slightly under-seasoned his mole. So which do you guys prefer, perfectly cooked or perfectly seasoned?
I mean, we eat Doritos, and they are not perfectly cooked, but they are perfectly seasoned. So I think that's pretty conclusive.
In what? Like, well, hold on a second.
I don't know any food that we eat
How is that a reason?
Chris, putting that aside.
Yeah.
In what way are Doritos not perfectly cooked? Are they over or under for you? Do you like a medium-rare Dorito?
They're a little dry. They're a little dry.
All right. Do you think that all the corn should be replaced with fish goo?
Mm-hmm.
Is that your problem with Doritos?
That is the issue, yeah. Fish goo. Need more fish goo. The Doritos people have not been responsive to my pleas, though.
So you're at dinner, and you ordered, for some reason, you ordered two, like, say you're not quite at Gail's level, so you ordered two bites of food.
Okay.
And you get the same dish back.
Two buckets, got it.
Yeah, or two buckets. So you've got a bucket where the fish is a little over and a bucket where the fish is a little bland. Which one do you send back?
Well, I probably rub one fish on the other fish.
Thank you.
So then they're both slightly under-seasoned, and then every other bite is still overcooked because that part doesn't change?
No. I rub the seasoned fish on the perfectly cooked fish and throw away the overcooked fish and then eat the...
Right.
Either well
Wait,
seasoned
why
fish.
Not just use the table salt?
Oh, sure. I'll just eat the table salt. Great.
Chris, you sound like you might actually give me a real answer. I'm curious. So let's go to you.
You know, of course I prefer the perfectly cooked fish. There's a reason why they put table salt on the table and not table, you know,
hibachi? Shabu shabu?
Hibachi. Sorry, hibachi. I always get those two confused.
Because I mean, like, that was so fun that you both thought that same thing. Let's say then it was slightly over salted. Because you can't, they don't put table
water? Table they have all these things on water. Tables.
I mean,
yeah, you're right. But they don't have a magic water that desalts the fish but leaves it otherwise the same.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, no, of course you're right. And if it's overcooked, you know, that's a little hard. The fish is a little firm and, you know, it's hard to undo or otherwise supplement. Maybe a little acid could break it down. But, you know, like...
I think you guys are right that it's definitely, if it's sending back, if it's under-seasoned, you can survive that much easier.
Yeah, but however, you know, it's also by degrees, right? A little overcooked versus way undersalted.
Right.
Sure.
It's harder to say what chef had the worst showing.
Yeah, I have no way in my own head. Like, I think Padma, one of the things she said was like underseasoned. She's like, that's cooking 101. And I've never completed cooking 101, but I would assume don't overcook is also in that textbook. So
Although she and Tom, it's already been noted on previous blogs or by other cast members that they like really salty food compared to the average customer.
That's interesting. Because really? Nick has been consistently just a little bit not salty enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For Tom.
Yeah.
And for Padma.
Right.
And apparently, what I've heard is like they like their food a little saltier.
Well, that's awesome. So wait,
it's the opposite of what I said with like Tom's like flavor crystals inside his mouth. Like he has like... Like
he has
flavor
a salt
holes.
Sponge.
Yeah, yeah. You know how we could tell it was the opposite, Ezra? It's you're not a doctor.
Not a doctor.
Well, hold on a second. Alex,
I'm not holding on. I'm keeping going.
No, if I can diagnose exactly the opposite of what's true, that's still damn helpful in most situations.
Super useful. That's true.
If you have no knowledge of a correct diagnosis versus an opposite diagnosis, right. It's a problem.
But it's one or the other.
I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who are perfectly fine who are taking really intense antibiotics and vice versa, but...
Taking really intense biotics?
Yeah, eating way too much yogurt.
Yogurt.
Oh, yeah, probiotics.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I would definitely prescribe that, like, whoa.
Also, I'm pretty sure that that same study revealed that 50% of yogurt is actually a fish that you weren't expecting.
Oh, no.
It's really...
No, it's just other yogurt.
Right.
It's like...
Right. So here's a quick question for you guys about the quick fire. I mean, about the Last Chance Kitchen.
Yeah.
Do you think... I mean, we thought Lewis was unstoppable, that he would definitely be beating Carlos, you know, like as of last week. Do you feel like he had a good showing? And the other half of this question is, do you feel like Carlos had a good showing in that he was so close to Lewis? Or do you think that we just overestimated Lewis and that Carlos is actually about even and on the same playing field?
I think this is a great question. Can I answer first?
Yes.
Cool. Go for it.
A couple things really quick. One, he cooked mole, and I love mole, so good for him.
Oh, it's so good.
Wait, this was a different mole, though, I don't think, than you've probably ever had.
Well, yeah,
it's not Oaxacan.
Yeah. That's the thing about mole, is that it's different everywhere, and it's frequently amazing. I think that's a great idea. Second of all, I do think Carlos has been undervalued in the show, but I think Carlos is an amazing chef, and it seems like he's not as great of a cooking in a short time on a weird challenge. Like, that's a different skill set than necessarily being a great, like, 20-year restaurant. So, I think he was a little undervalued. I think he seemed to have a good showing. Here was my thought on Lewis. Lewis makes this speech right before this cooking about how he's taken a lot of chances and that's paid off for him. And just the part of me that understands math, like, thinks that that's a really bad way of looking at your situation. That's like, I've taken all of these situations where I had a lot of chance of failing and I did not fail. Therefore, the odds are if I take a chance, I will not fail. And that is not how chance works.
Yeah.
There is no, like, the previous amount of chance. Anyway, he took a risk perhaps in this dish, and the thing about a risk is sometimes it doesn't work, and it seems like he made a small mistake.
It's kind of like he said, like, I played Russian roulette 5 times and won, therefore I'm invincible.
Yes, exactly right. Therefore nothing can kill me, right? That's exactly right. That's exactly the sort of decision he's making. And so I think, yeah, so they overcooked his food and still made an amazing dish, and might even, depending on whether or not the sleeves were faked, he might have won from that. So I think he had a great showing. That's my feeling. Ez or Megan?
Yeah, I don't think anyone should feel bad about what they did. I think Carlos is probably getting short shrift. Generally, he's performed pretty well, really. Like, definitely better than Nick if you take those last, like, 6 episodes, I think.
No kidding. Yeah, for sure. Let's use this then. Let's use that as a transition. I wanted to jump into this. Let's get into our listener mail segment. So we got a couple of things I want to share with you guys. You may have seen some of these already. So first up, I want to just quick thing from at Slick Shoes, like Hughes with an S, Slicks Hughes. I don't know, at something on Twitter, pointed out to us this week about the controversy episode, or the controversy from last week about the oven being at 500 and ruining Nick's crunchy business. And at Slicks Hughes said, pointed out that 500 degrees Fahrenheit is 260 degrees Celsius. So the temperature in Fahrenheit that he accidentally got is the same in Celsius that he would have liked to have gotten if it had been Fahrenheit. And he thinks that he asks the question, or she, Twitter handles, asks the question, if that's a coincidence or if Nicholas was reading the wrong temperature scale on the oven and made a very simple mistake. What do you guys think?
Yeah. There could be two scales printed like a speedometer in a car, or his French classically trained brain could have been reading in snob degrees.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say, you know, never attribute to malice what could be attributed to, you know, Celsius.
Adequately to the metric system.
To the metric system.
That is a super smart observation.
It is, and I did not. I could not tell from our video. Like we did not have nearly the close up on that oven dial to know if that is true or not. No. That could have happened. In any case, I think Nicholas has a history of assuming that the ovens and the other heating instruments in the kitchens know what he meant. Even
the
when he didn't do it.
Remarked that these things keep happening to you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then another one happened this episode. So it's like, I think Nicholas just has this thing where he thinks that an oven should turn to a temperature, and then he's mad when it doesn't do that. Nicholas just lives in the kitchen of the future, and so it's weird when he's back on present day.
Anyway. It's all his future syphilis is just screwing off his time zone and stuff.
Yeah, it just really messes him up. Future syphilis is in metric. That's the real problem. So that's on Twitter. If you have any questions or comments for us on Twitter, at Pack Your Mics. Now, a question from the Facebook page. Danielle on Facebook asks, there's an ask at the end, but it starts with says. Anyway, quote, she wants to know... it seems the chefs get a lot of flack from their fellow contestants for cooking only one type of food, especially in this case, ethnic food, which is a problem unto itself. But even if they cook that type of food really well, question, can a chef be a top chef if they only cook Asian or only cook Mexican food all the time really well? Or does it have to be someone who's constantly changing or being more inventive with inter-genre cooking? I added that last part.
Okay. You could... If you never make a bad dish and you always make perfect food, I don't think anyone cares what like genre it's in.
Yeah, unless the challenge is specifically like, you know.
Oh, well, like, draw flags. What was that?
Yeah,
was a challenge
put,
I think last
draw
year.
Draw maps.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or something on a map or something like that. Yeah, sometimes it's like that, and that's maybe more typically Masters or Canada.
Right. You know. Also, yeah, it's also like possible that. Okay, so, I mean, so let's not. Let's not be super vague about this. We're talking about Carlos, and everybody was giving a lot of shit this episode and before for only cooking Mexican food. Now, if he'd cooked Mexican food when the challenge was he drew a knife and he got Morocco, then, yeah, that would have been an issue.
Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, Mexican cuisine is a pretty deep set of flavors, and you've got pretty much every protein known to man in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got a bunch of different cooking styles. I mean, if he can keep consistently making excellent food that just happens to be Mexican and happens to kick everybody's asses on these challenges, like, I don't see a problem with him getting as far as he's gotten, if not going on to win. Bayless did it.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Absolutely right. Rick Bayless won Masters season one, and he cooked exclusively Mexican food. He didn't cook a single dish that was not Mexican. It's a different formatted show, so he had fewer challenges. He only had it was like that one where there were three chefs, and then he won his round with a Mexican dish, and then there was like only six episodes of the Champions round or whatever, back when that was super weird. But still, he cooked exclusively Mexican food and won handily. And he cooked a mole that was unlike any other mole. I think mole is different enough. You could cook just different moles each day. That's how much depth.
Top mole? Yeah. You can do it?
Yeah. This is a mole scallop? Anyway, I think that's a great point. Rick Bayless is a great example there. The other thing I wanted to point out that I thought in response to this, because this definitely was something that was irritating Megan and I when we were watching this, but it's important to remember it was just other contestants in confessionals giving him crap about cooking so much Mexican food. It was not the judges.
Interesting point.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, contestants complain about all kinds of stuff. They could complain about his snoring, and it has nothing to do with his actual Top Chef performance. So I think it was just other people were being jerks to him, and I think that was mostly because he didn't really know kitchen manners as well. He seemed a little weird about that, but definitely... If you cook, you'd never go home for cooking great food. Even on this show where we had a couple of people cooked really good food, it was still... Actually, that's not true. I'm sorry. Stephanie Seymour went home for cooking great food.
Yeah.
But other than that, except when Nicholas screws you, you don't go home for cooking great food. So, yeah. I think that's probably pretty well agreed. Yeah. Nodding is not super helpful on the radio.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I agree.
Megan agreed. Any other thoughts on the cooking that cooking food in one style?
I think it's honestly hard to cook food like in one style during Top Chef generally, in that like you're gonna learn some stuff during Top Chef.
Yeah, and I guess that was one thing that they were having trouble with, other contestants were, about him. It seemed like he was being less touched by New Orleans. But I also find, like, I mean, on Top Chef Masters, you're not supposed to have learned a lot from beginning to end. And Top Chef, you are, because they have slightly lower caliber chefs. But it still seems like most of these chefs have a better idea of where they're going or where they are. And they don't, I don't know, it feels like 6 weeks of a game show should not really change your world that much. To me, I like seeing people cook the food they cook. So,
yeah,
I'm not as convinced that you need to show a lot of growth over the course of the show. Like the you're not going for most improved chef. That's not the goal. That's one of those crappy prizes.
Also,
yeah, but you'd watch anything,
and it makes for good TV. It certainly does. I don't know. And I mean, I think that the show and the challenges therein, because you're in, you know, cities in the U.S. and, you know, you're trying to highlight that city, like kind of like a standardized test. You know, sometimes it skews towards new American food.
Right. Which is also, which Danielle also pointed out in her own answer of her question, which was that we don't harp on people who are classically French trained and cook a lot of classic French food or cook new American food. Because that's just what's normal. Whereas with Asian food, for example, we get a lot of that. But we also, chefs who are into molecular gastronomy also get crap for cooking a lot of molecular gastronomy stuff. Shirley got
foams.
Yeah, too many foams. Well, that's, yeah. Or smoking everything, which is a thing. Carrie got a lot of crap for cooking so many different doughs, and Nina got for cooking too many. I don't know. They want you to show a variety of skills as opposed to, like, can you make a gnocchi that fits each different challenge? Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Mexican as a genre, Mexican food as a genre, is so much bigger than gnocchi. It's not the same. Like, that doesn't seem like the same, a fair same criticism.
I feel like the other contestants, like, if you do something really well and you're constantly doing the thing that you do really well, they just feel like it's maybe not fair or something like that. I don't know. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that was the thing with, like, the gnocchis or I don't know. I think that there's that sort of, like, well, you know, they might be really good, but they're just doing this one thing.
Totally.
But yeah. not that it's a fair thing for them to say, but I think that as a contestant, maybe that's where they're coming from. I don't know.
I think that's exactly right. But at the same time, like, you get someone on the show for their strength. I understand why it feels weird as a contestant, but at the same, it's not cheating to do something you do well on a show showcasing your talent. I don't know. Right?
Yeah,
I mean, depth is obviously more, like, variety is more interesting for television, but I don't know. I think we mostly agree with you, Danielle. If you have a question or comments on Facebook, facebook.com/packyourmics. Guys, that brings us down to the end. Do you have any? Well, let's do this. Let's do a quick, everybody, we saw from the preview, next week is double elimination.
Yeah.
Because Top Chef giveth a no contestant and taketh one away. So we're going to be down to four. Let's say you're right that it's Ezra/internet, that it's Lewis and Nicholas and the ladies, Shirley and Nina. Who are your two eliminations next week? Who are the two in the finale? Everybody gets one prediction. Ez, we'll start with you.
I mean, I hate to do it to Lewis, but if Lewis and Nicholas go home for this, I would be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I'd love to have a Shirley Nina. Like, to know that one of them's gonna win.
I entirely agree with you. If my heart is guessing, like, that's my heart wants, I would love that finale. I think that would be an awesome finale. Is that what you think is gonna happen, or just what you want to happen?
I mean, I could see, okay, the way Nick's cooking, I can't see him beating Shirley or Nina. Like,
I would be really surprised.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, people slip up, it happens. Like, also, I think people have come off the break in weird ways before.
Right. Nina made a grave mistake this week by eating all of her dough when she was stress eating while she was cooking, but it worked great. It would have ruined her dish to put that on there, perhaps. So,
yeah
people, I mean, great people make mistakes, and sometimes making the right mistake at the right time is helpful. So there's some luck in that, I guess. But, yeah, some great chefs can mess up. Lewis can overcook his food when he's taking too many chances.
Mm-hmm.
But you think it's likely that the ladies will prevail?
That's if I was betting, yeah, that's who I put it on.
Chris, you know. What does Brooklyn think?
I think Louis Nina. I think that those two, and like I'm having a hard time discounting consistency over a long period of time and with a variety of challenges. And I think Louis and Nina have shown that they're the strongest of the group in those two.
In the long run.
In the long run. And that also plays well to show us you on a plate. And yeah, I think that I have the strongest showing at those two.
Megan?
Tanya might be screaming at me through her phone right now.
We'll tell her to not go away to secret locations and not be on the show.
I know, right?
Megan, what do you think?
Well, I'm trying to remember because I feel like Louis has been great in the quick fires in Last Chance Kitchen, but I don't think that he was as consistent early on.
Yeah, it's weird. There were a lot of
memory serves.
So it's kind of weird and different. But he's also been doing these, he's done amazing, I was going to say something similar, so I'm going to help you maybe.
Okay.
Tell me if this is not, feel free to let me know if this is not a friendly amendment. But I think that he has been, like, there's something about the quickfire challenge that really worked for his brain, but maybe if it was a wide open field, he might not do as well, like 5 hours cook your food as opposed to 10 minutes cook with this paperclip. Like,
yeah, he needs some restrictions.
Yeah, maybe he needs the restrictions to achieve.
Right, and we also have to remember that the people he's been winning against are people who have been kicked off the show.
Head-to-head against people who just got eliminated, yeah.
So, I don't know. He
still cooked the best thing Tom had tasted all season.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That is true.
But I think that I really think that if Nina is not in the top two, I would be so surprised. I would probably cry. Oh. Because I think that she has just been so consistent all season. And I think also that Shirley will be there too. And I mean, it's what I really hope will happen, but I also think that odds are that that is what will happen.
All right. Maybe this is just for variety. I would love it if it was Nina and Shirley. I think that would be the most compelling finale. But I'm going to say Louis Shirley. And here's why. I think Nina has been a consistent performer, but momentum entirely favors Shirley right now over Nina. She's had more slip-ups recently than her average. And
her average of none.
Yeah, her average of none. Yeah. And she lucked out on her slip up this week, but Shirley has some, you know, more bouncing in her achievement, but these last couple episodes have just been blowing everybody away. And I think that whole thing about heart and like your voice is a little overplayed, but I do think she's just really on her game right now. And same thing with Louis. Like, Louis is coming off of assuming he wins, has come off this amazing run and is coming to Hawaii like just so balls out. I just think it'd be hard. And then I think Shirley beats him and gets a bunch of money, which she has to like use to pay off the taxes and all the other stuff she won. But I'm also partially saying that just to be different. I really agree with what you were saying about what you guys are talking about with Louis and the restrictions. I think that is a really interesting point. I don't know if Louis can do as well in the big open challenge. Oh, so interesting. I can't wait. Can't wait.
All right.
So excited.
Very excited.
Long episode.
Yeah, long episode, but tell us your picks. So thank you for making it here. Thank you for listening. It's great. You know, you found the best Top Chef podcast and you stuck with it the whole way. Tell me, I want to hear it right now on at Pack Your Mics, facebook.com/packyourmics, or you can email us podcast@read-weep.com and tell me who are your picks, who are the two. Also, I would love some more amateur detective work, so get in there and tell me if you think Louis did win. But those are what I want to know. I really want to know. Just give me two names, and those are the people who are going to move on from next week. That's what I really want to hear. And we'll hopefully get Sarah and Tanya's contributions as well, whether Tanya's is yelled or not. I don't know. Lastly, you also go to packyourmics.com/Amazon if you want to buy anything from Amazon, just like you normally would, but a small percentage of your purchase goes to support our show, and we would appreciate that because it's hard. It's expensive to be the best. So... So that's it. Thank you so much, half of Brooklyn. Chris, thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course.
Half of San Francisco, Ez, thank you for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome.
It's been really fun. I'm Alex Falcone. Chris, pack your mics and go. And,
aww.
Hold on a second, on your way out, if you see Tanya, tell her to come back.
Okay.
Because right now, you lost to someone who wasn't here. Two people.
I mean, I had a good run.
You did. You had a really good run, and we bonded over space, so I'm sad to see you go. I'm like,
I do love space.
I'm like Padma when she had to send Carlos home. I'm crying a little bit. And then like Emerald crying from, or no, when Shirley won. That's what it was. Padma cried when Shirley won, and then Emerald cried from Padma and Shirley crying.
So you're crying a little bit for sending me home, but everyone else is crying a little bit because Tanya will be back next week.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Hey, Alex, you remember when Chris punched you for no reason the first episode of the podcast?
Oh, yeah. What the hell was that for?
I think this is why.
I have a suspicion.
I have a time machine.
And a really good record in the Last Chance podcast. Let's see everybody next week. I look forward to it. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.